Okay, so this is a center update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share a little bit about what happens behind the scenes that's not necessarily evident as you come on Sundays. And so the first thing I'd like to share is that last week we had a membership orientation for those who are interested in becoming a community member of Unity Spiritual Center. And so we want to take time now to acknowledge those people. We had 9 people decide that they want to become community members, and each of these 9 individuals have said yes to 3 things that we ask new community members to say yes to. The first is to say yes to deepening their own spiritual journey, their own spiritual practice, by participating in spirit groups and attending classes. We ask that they say yes to some meaningful involvement in the life of the church. And we ask that they say yes to some form of designated meaningful contribution that lives in integrity with their desire to take on their fair share of ownership of the community. And these individuals said yes to these 3 things. Their yes is in the context of their needs, their desires, their effort. And so we appreciate that. And I'd like to call forth now Reverend Dr. Jane Simmons and our Vice President of our Board of Trustees, David Lineweber, to join me as we invite up and acknowledge those who are becoming new community members, and we're going to create a moment for them. So let's this is our first time. I'm a little nervous, so let's go, I'll turn it over to her. That way I'll stop being nervous.
Take a breath. We are so delighted to welcome these new folks right into community membership with Unity Spiritual Center. We're excited, we're delighted. We just can't tell you, we're so happy we can hardly stand it. That's this is how Michael greets you when you ask him how he is. I'm so happy I can hardly stand it. And so when I call your name, and I apologize in advance if I don't speak it quite right, I'm going to do everything I can to try to do that right, but in case. And some of these people come to the first service, some to the second, so we've done it the first time around. We're going to call these names. They may or may not be here, but come on up if you are. So, Sharon Castoldi.
Yep,
come on down.
Come on up, Sharon.
Glenn Crosby.
So you just come up and just line up on
Greta Cosby. Catherine Denny. Did I say that right? All right. Patricia Garrett. Come on down. Brittany Hopkins. Donna Prothy. No. All right.
All right.
And you can give these out to them. So we want to welcome and bless our new members, our new community members. So I'm going to lead us in a blessing. I will say it first, and then I'll have us all join in to give them our blessing. And it goes like this. We love you. We bless you. We truly appreciate you, and we behold the truth of who you are. All right? Ready?
No, just a second. We're bestowing the... Yeah.
Start rubbing your hands together. Get ready. All right. Let us bless our wonderful new community members. We love you.
We bless you.
We truly appreciate you. And we behold the truth of who you are. Welcome to each and every one of you.
All right, and so now we have a hugging receiving line. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. All right, so isn't this something that you all want to experience someday? So if you're interested in knowing more about membership in Unity Spiritual Center, there's these flyers out there in the foyer. You just check them out, and we'll have new member, community member orientation about every other month, so stay on the lookout for that. Thank you so much. Blessings to you all.
Yes.
Now I've asked David to share a little bit about our experience yesterday. We had our annual board retreat. And so, David?
Well, good morning. Once a year, we get together as a board, and ironically, we looked at May, we looked at June, and the only time that the whole board could be there was yesterday, Memorial Day weekend. So we got together yesterday at my house and had just a wonderful time together. It's a time for us to welcome new board members and kind of get to know them. New ones get to know the old ones, and old ones get to know the new ones. And so we did some kind of get-to-know-you activity stuff. Had a wonderful meditation for about 45 minutes that was something that Drs. Gary and Jane brought back from their trip to Seattle with the gentleman's name was Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza. So that was an amazing experience that we all had. Then we had barbecue and broke bread together, so that was fun. And then in the afternoon, worked on an activity that is, for those of you that have been through the Q process, you know, there's an individual Q process, and then we did Q process stuff to find out our shadow card for the church, which, Gary, I don't see hanging over there. It must be in the chapel still. We keep that in the chapel when we meet as a board of directors. And the Q card for the church, well, this process that we went through that afternoon was our first practice worksheet yesterday afternoon that we did as a board that is a group Q process worksheet for decision makers. So that was a kind of cool activity, and it is to help us separate out our own stuff from the church's stuff so we can see more clearly when we're facing some kind of challenge. So it was an interesting activity, a good activity, and we've encouraged Gary that we really want to do this as a board when we come to critical decisions that seem to be something of great weight for the church or something where there's some conflict or something like that. So I'm looking forward to working with the rest of the board with that. But you are led by a great group of people. They're all superb awesome individuals, and it's a real pleasure to know them and to work with them on a monthly basis. So,
thank you, David. Appreciate it. I'm wondering if you could ask the rest of the board members to stand just briefly. Ask the rest of the board members to stand just briefly. We can acknowledge them.
So the rest of you board members that are here, I know some of the board members go to the first service. Any other board members here with us today?
Please stand. Serena. Let us just appreciate you.
Yeah, here we go. Give them all a round of applause. They worked very hard for you guys.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's get ready for our meditation experience.
So I invite you to join me in a time of meditation. Just sit back in your seat, relax, close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you. And we begin by acknowledging that God is our source. That no matter what may be going on in our lives, the source of love and healing is within us always, just awaiting our recognition. And so we do that now. As we begin to follow our breath, as it moves in and out, no need to control it. We just observe it. And we allow it to anchor us deep in this moment. And so I invite you to feel your feet. They're on the floor, feel them on the floor. Feel your legs. Move your awareness to the trunk of your body. Your shoulders, arms, and hands. Feel your neck. Your head, your face, really sink your awareness deep within and inhabit this now moment. The present moment is the only place we can experience the presence of God. So I invite you to continue following your breath and imagine breathing right into your heart space. As you bring into your mind's eye someone or something that you appreciate, and allow that feeling to be activated. Feel it warming your heart. And let that feeling expand and radiate beyond your heart as it fills your body. Feel your cells igniting with this high vibration of appreciation, invigorated, on fire, alive. Feel your aliveness. It is the truth of who you are. And as we continue to breathe into the heart, feeling appreciation, letting it expand and radiate, we create a coherent energetic field. We know that what we are expressing matters. And so we allow the joy within us, the unconditional love, the compassion to rise up like a wellspring. Knowing that the one presence, the one power, the one life lives as us, through us, within us. There is no separation. God is our source. And we are each here to be the one to make the difference. I am that I am has sent me. Has sent you, has sent every one of us to be the voice and the heart of God. And so we enter the silence together, holding this truth that we are each here to make a difference. Thank you, Blessed Spirit, for the truth that sets us free, that we truly are one with the One, that there is no separation, that God is our source. And we give grateful thanks in the name and after the nature of the one life. We say, Amen.
So it's interesting you came up with that title of that song, Michael. Just last night, you know, part of my process, let me digress for a second, part of my process for coming up with what I'm going to say is about walking and talking, because we live in Eagle Ridge, where there's a lot of trails, 5 miles of trails through pine woods, and so every night, especially when it's my turn to talk, I'll walk several miles, and then I'll think about what it is that I'm wanting to share, but then I forget when I get back. And I don't know about you, but I've reached a place where I'm just, all of a sudden I'll be going along, and then all of a sudden there's this blank. It's like the mind left me. And then I'll just wait a minute, and then finally, boom, it just walks back into my body, and then now I remember what I was going to do. If anybody else have those kinds of experiences? Anyway, so I found that if I could get, I have this little recorder, and I have this little microphone, and so I decided I'd wear the recorder, and I'd wear the microphone, and I'd go for my walk, and I'd do my talk. And so I put a new spin on walking your talk. And then I listened to it, and while I have a copy of what I had to say, I just didn't make any sense at all. So anyway, with that said, let me just share that I'm beginning a series. Every time Jane and I are, you know, we rotate our times when we speak, and we don't have any reason or rhyme to it. It just happens, like Jane's going to be gone, and so I'm going to speak, and then I'm gone, so Jane has to speak. And so it turns out that I speak about once a month or sometimes twice a month. And yet every time I speak, bless you, I'm wanting to really, I'm wanting to add on to what I said before. In other words, I really like series. I like to build on what's going on. And so I'm going to do this series called Making Your Mind Matter, or us really understanding this idea that it matters how we are perceiving and meaning-making in our life. And this title comes from Dr. Joe Dispenza's book, The Placebo Effect, Making Your Mind Matter. And while it's subtitled, I'm borrowing that subtitle to describe this series, I'm not necessarily drawing directly from Dr. Joe's work, but I'm going to be utilizing it throughout the series. But just more for the purpose of emphasizing that in unity, we are a theology of consciousness as opposed to a theology of beliefs. So it's important that we have the capacity to use our mind correctly in order to be able to rightly engage what we're having as our experience, as opposed to incorrectly engaging what we're having as our experience. One of the things I wanted to point out is that unity began in 1889, over 100 years ago, in the beginning as a prayer and healing movement with Charles and Myrtle Fillmore as our co-founders. This is a picture of Charles Fillmore. And it never was intended that the unity movement become a movement of churches, per se. It began as a prayer and healing movement, and then people were drawn to the message and wanted to gather together in study groups, and so study groups began to form, and then eventually these groups would be asking for leadership, and so eventually leaders were trained. But always Charles Fillmore would never show up as a preacher, per se. His work was not as a pastor, but rather as an educator. And he would talk, he would say his talks aren't sermons, but are lessons. And that was a very important context, at least for me in my spiritual journey, to be able to be present to a spiritual talk as spiritual instruction as opposed to someone sermonizing. And so I'm wanting to invite you to be in the listening experience of what I'm going to share today as if you're going to have to teach it to somebody. In other words, when I'm asking you to sit and listen to me in the context of I'm going to want to listen in such a way as that I will be able to teach what I have learned by virtue of this talk, that is the context by which we align our brain and all the dynamics of learning to its optimum state. In other words, if I just asked you to listen to the talk with whatever state of mind you brought into the room, that would be a different experience if you're listening to the talk for the purpose of having to teach what I'm going to say to you. Can you see how that's so? We don't have enough time just coming together on Sundays to experience the depth of learning that needs to take place in order for us to really have a transformative impact on our life. So we have to expedite our learning process. So I'm going to ask you to listen to this talk from the standpoint of you going to, in turn, teach to somebody else later. Okay? So listen from that standpoint and see if there's not a different experience for you. So today I'm wanting to talk about the third principle that we have as our foundation in unity. You know, when we gather together, it's important that those who are new to unity have a sense of what they're getting themselves into, because we're not sort of like the mainstream, right? We're a bit different. And it's, and not only are we different in the context that we're a theology of consciousness, not a theology of belief, but we're different in the sense that we have a foundation principle. Our first principle in unity is what? One presence and one power, God the good. Okay, so that's important for us to know that that's what we teach. There's just God going on. We don't teach that there are two powers at work in the world. We teach that there's just one power. And given that that's our teaching, and the fact that it seems like there's more than one power at work in our life, there is something that we need to reconcile. We need to reconcile the fact that there's one power at work in our life, but yet it seems that there are something else going, there's something else happening in the world. And so one of the ways in which we reconcile this is understanding that if the first principle is that there's just God going on, the second principle has to be that we're created in God's image and likeness. That means that we are spiritual. We're God-made. And if we're God-made, then how we are being in the world is very important, because we're either being God-made in that intentionality that we're here as an extension of the divine, or something else is happening in our way of being with what we're having. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And the third principle is that we create our own reality. And the fourth principle is that if our reality is something other than what we really desire and want, the good news is that we can change our personal reality through what? How do we change what our personal reality is? What's our mechanism for change? Our thoughts. Okay, so if part of what is supporting our experience of what we're having as our personal reality, then it makes a difference to our thoughts and feelings, right? As well as our beliefs, as well as our states of being, as well as our behaviors. All of these things contribute to how we are showing up in relationship to what we have, and therefore what becomes of our experience. Following us so far? The fourth principle is that through spiritual practice, we can alter our reality, create something more in alignment with our manifest destiny, our sense of what is ours to be and do. And then the fifth principle is taking authentic action, being the change, living in the context of a greater mind than we currently possess. So those principles form the context of why we gather together as a unity community for the purpose of transforming our lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in the world. And I think that as we understand that, then our next question is that, do we believe this? And what is our practice? And so my sense is, as I look within myself and I get in touch with the fact that I create my own reality, and the obvious should be is that we need to understand that my personal reality is possibly different than your personal reality, that there's something that we do that's unique to us as an individual that casts our reality into a specific context. And so while we talk about creating our own personal reality, we need to understand that that's unique to us as individuals, but at the same time, it defines us as individuals. What we ordain as being the truth unto us becomes that unto us. And when we understand that as a principle, then we work a bit differently with how our life is unfolding. So while we have a basic theology that says that if we alter our thinking and our beliefs and address how we're being with what we're having, we can affect, transform whatever our experience is. So that's the basis of our foundation. And we're witnessing now emerging sciences that agree with that position. Have you heard of epigenetics, for instance? This is the study of how our choices affect our genes. We're discovering that we can turn on and off our genes, which can affect our health, which can affect our relationships. And while we're trying to do that with drugs and with chemicals and things like that, there's a whole emerging science that has to do with that's all what our mind can do. And it seems like we've been teaching this for 100 years already as a unity, and now all of a sudden they've created a science out of it, and now all of a sudden we have this validation. But the reality is that we've been thinking this way, we have believed this way, but yet our practice has yet to fully inhabit the truth of these principles, or so it seems, is what point I'm trying to make here. The other emerging science is the science of psychoneuroimmunology, if I can say that correctly, which is the science of how our thoughts and feelings and our states of being affect our nervous and immune systems, that we can literally think ourselves into an unhealthy place. And indeed, as we look out at our life experience, the quality of our life is indeed affected by the well-being within our own awareness, within ourselves. So as we begin to look at not only the emerging sciences and yet our tradition and unity to always understand that the activity of mind and what's happening in consciousness is a defining factor in what constitutes our reality. We know these things, but the fact of the matter is we're insufficient with respect to a practice that really transforms our reality. Okay, so why is that? Okay, let's go to the next slide, see why it is. There we go. So we don't necessarily think about this idea of improving our life or transforming our reality, so to speak, because changing our thoughts and our feelings and all those things is really more about how we're being with what we're having. And so when we don't think about improving our life by changing our thoughts or how we're being with what we're having, we instead think about improving what we're having as opposed to improving what our reality is. Not sure if that quite was clear enough. So the idea is that we don't commonly think about the idea that we're creating our own reality because it seems as if our reality is what comes to us by virtue of what we're having as our experience. So we believe that our reality, in other words, we might not consciously believe that, but we're conditioned to be present to what we're having as if it's the reality that is arising in our moment, not recognizing that our reality is not in the context of what we're having, but reality arises in the context of how we be with what we're having. Because it is the act of being with what we're having that determines whether or not what we're having is defining us, and therefore a limit unto us, and therefore a point of bondage for us. And so as we understand that we're instead looking conditioned to look to what we're having as our reality, then we can see that we focus almost universally on whatever's going on in our life is something that we have to manage in order for us to be okay. Okay, so as I'm looking at this whole question, I can change my life by just focusing on changing my thoughts and bring in an elevated state of emotion and a consistent focus on what I'm wanting to know is making its way into my life, but I instead let go of that and instead try to focus on managing what I'm having as my life experience as if it's not for me. Can you see how much of our effort in terms of creating reality is really trying to manage what we're having as opposed to being the change that we seek, being who we've come here to be, as opposed to collapsing our whole life force into trying to manage what we're having. And therefore, feeling either well or not because of what we have. Have you ever felt okay or not because of what you're having in your life? Well, and can you not see something wrong with that? In other words, how is it possible that what we're having has the power to diminish us? Well, it's only possible if we believe that what we're having is a power over us as opposed to coming from us. Now, it may be scary to open yourself to accepting that what you have right now in your life is coming from you. That's the hard part of this teaching. But the teaching is much more palatable, and being able to accept the fact that what I'm having comes from me is more resourceful than not. Because the moment that I say that this is not coming from me but coming from out there, I lose all my power, you see. Because I have no power out there in the effect of life. I only have power and cause. It's tracking me so far? Remember, you're going to have to teach this to somebody. Okay, you're going to have to teach this to somebody, because until you know it, we can't get on to lesson number two. Okay, we're not going to resolve this today. We're just going to get to a place where we see what the next lesson needs to be. And we'll get there in just a minute. But for the most part, we need to acknowledge that we are living our life from the outside in, and that's sort of the way of the world, as opposed to from the inside out. So, you know, instead of looking at the opportunity to be in the discernment process, who do I have to be with whatever it is that I'm having right now so that I can use what I have to do what is mine to do? Instead, we have something in our life that triggers us, that causes us to want this to be different because it's making us feel yucky inside. And then we're compelled because what we have is defining who we are, and we know that that's not right and doesn't feel good. So we have to be able to step out of the dynamic where in our conditioned self, we're living our life from the outside in, making what matters out there more important than what is inside. And we have to reverse that. That's our work to do. No amount of prayer is going to get God to fix the way our life looks and feels, because God knows how our life looks and feels is not against us. But how we're being with our life determines whether or not it's for us or against us. Is that not the truth? So we want to get to a place where we can understand that if what's happening in our life is something that is not desirable in our life, well, then there must be some aspect of what I'm creating that is happening beyond my awareness or independent of my desires. In other words, there's another mind at work within me. You see, and so Carl Jung says, until we, you know, make the unconscious conscious, we will believe our life is fated, that we have no choice. And so when we be in the question, what is this this larger part of me that is running my life, independent of my awareness? Well, we know in terms of brain science, there are aspects of us that aren't conscious, right? We don't have to think about breathing or swallowing or blinking. Those things happen unconsciously. And then there are beliefs and messages and thoughts and feelings that live within us that have been conditioned over the years. And so there are things within us that we might not know that are contributing to how we are being with the moment that we're in. But more importantly in this regard is how our body participates in this. And so the concept that I'm wanting to introduce you to now is that your body becomes your mind when we habitually repeat aspects of ourselves over and over and over again. And so if you just think about it, most of our life is repetitious, routine, that we do the very same things over and over and over again, that we've trained our body to be the mind so that we can do things without thinking. Now, just for a moment, what are some of the things that you do without thinking? Mostly everything that we do without thinking. Some more obvious than others. And so we don't necessarily see that the body becomes the mind, and when the body becomes the mind, then we say and do things that are in the context of the body's need to feed its addictions, feed its appetite, to feed its hunger for the internal cocktail it's grown accustomed to. So we train our bodies to memorize certain emotional states so that we can have familiar feelings and experiences so that we can manage our life in the context of what is known. And inadvertently, ultimately end up replicating our past, and so that whatever we're living in the present moment is basically a reiteration of the past, and the body is right there reminding us. I mean, for instance, have you ever had the experience of noticing yourself doing something that you know you're not supposed to do and just watch that happen? We've all done that, right? So have you ever had the experience of going for that second helping of ice cream or that second helping of pizza or that second helping of dessert and sort of knowing that you're not supposed to do that? It's on some level you know that you shouldn't do that. And then you can be observing yourself and know that, and there's a part of you that just sort of allows that to happen. And you can sort of try to intervene. No, you're not going to do that. You're on this program. You're not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But then there's this other voice, isn't there? And where does that voice come from? It doesn't come from your head, that part of you that wants you to be on your program. That voice comes from your body. Your body is wanting that extra scoop. Your body's wanting that conflict with your boss. Your body's wanting that issue with your son or daughter because it craves that emotional stimulation. Even if it's negative, it craves it. And unless we understand that that's a part of how we create our reality, that when the body is being our mind, in a sense, and basically running the show, then we are a law unto our own thoughts and feelings because we replicate our past over and over again. So we're wanting to get free of this, right? We want to get to it quite fast. We got a few more slides to go through first. Okay, so, you know, the body memorizing things is not the problem. And here's a picture of a couple of our folks from our church who are dancers. And we know in any kind of art form where the task is to master something, mastery of any kind of art form basically is training the body to be the mind so that you don't have to think when you are doing that activity. Why? Because thinking interrupts the flow. There are times when you don't want your mind involved, and therefore it's important that the body be the mind. And when the body is the mind, you know, it makes things a lot easier. I can remember first learning how to fly, and David probably can relate to this, and the other pilots in the room. When you're first trying to fly, you know, there's your plane can go up and down, this way or that way. So there's a lot of different axes. And, you know, you have something that looks like a steering wheel or a stick there, and it goes this way or that way, up or down, and then sideways or sideways. And when you're learning how to fly, you and then you have feet, too. You're pushing and pushing. The instructor says, turn this way. And so all the movements are very mechanical and disjointed. But then something magical happens. After your body memorizes it, you don't have to think about what to do. Your body just moves. You adjust, and you go with the flow. But the other side, the negative side is that we've memorized all of those dysfunctional behaviors. All those quirky life patterns have also been memorized, and that's what keeps us sort of tied to a selfhood that just can't get better, that can't get out of dealing with what we're having and focused on what we're creating. And so that's what we need to move towards is to resolve that. And so we need to understand that we live in a quantum universe. We don't have time to go into the science today, but we will go into the science because it's an important part of our spiritual journey, quantum spirituality, that is. So thinking, when we think thoughts, we are broadcasting to the field of infinite possibilities. And when we have elevated emotions, we're drawing back from the field into our own personal life that which we are sending out. So what it manifests in our life, we're in effect drawing into our life. But that's not bad. That's not bad. But what we have to remember is that we end up ultimately recreating our past as our future. And so in order for us to not recreate our past and take it into the future, we have to recondition our body to a different mind, because its current conditioning is not working for us. So subsequent talks will be about how we recondition our body to a new mind, a mind that is free from the entrapments and the conditioning that we have faced otherwise by virtue of our former self or our current self, as the case may be. And this idea of a new mind shouldn't be too weird for us. I mean, coming up with a new mind or a huge mind, however you want to address that. My brain is so huge, it's just, anyway. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So the way back 2,000 years ago, the Apostle Paul knew that the renewal of our mind frees us from the entrapments of the established consciousness and moves us into an expression of our potential. So stay tuned for the subsequent parts to this ongoing series of making our mind matter, because in order to recondition ourselves to a new mind, we have to make our mind matter. In other words, you have to make your mind focus on what you're wanting to create in the moment, as opposed to trying to fix or correct or improve what you are having as your experience. Okay, now I want you to teach it to somebody. Your assignment is to teach it to somebody. Now, some of you will not do that. I probably wouldn't do it myself. But I would feel bad later on. I'd feel less than. So it's a self-correcting declaration. Some of you will feel guilty for not doing this. And then others will do this. You'll sit down with a friend or even sit in front of a mirror and just teach. Or ideally, you teach someone who's here sharing the information with you so you both can build upon what you've learned together. So whenever I'm doing a talk, from now on, whenever you come, just come prepared to become teachers of this principle, this truth. God bless you all.